Fasten your seatbelt. Turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
The moon is the same moon above you, aglow with its cool evening light, but shining at night in Tunisia, never does it shine so bright. The stars are aglow in the heavens, but only the wise understand that shining at night in Tunisia, they guide you through the desert sand.
Tunisia, the northernmost country in Africa. Its fertile fields and desert sands ruled for millennia from the ancient city of Carthage by the Phoenicians, the Romans, the Arabs, the Turks, and the French. Achieving independence in 1956, its leader overthrown by a brutal dictator in 1987, who himself was overthrown in the first of the Arab Spring demonstrations. The self-immolation of a street vendor in 2010 led to a new government and new hope in Tunisia, even as the Arab Spring revolutions created turmoil and chaos in other countries. The fledgling Tunisian democracy was recognized with a Nobel Peace Prize last year. I'm Glenn Moberg. Young people led the Arab Spring Revolution in Tunisia, and what we have today is three young people from that country, Wad Gesmi, Zainab Naloudi, and Tasneem Darati, who are in central Wisconsin thanks to the Thomas Jefferson Scholarship Program administered by the U.S. State Department and IREX, the International Research and Exchanges Board. We're going to hear their impressions of the political upheaval that gripped their part of the world and their eyewitness accounts of our own presidential campaign. And its call to stop young Muslim people like them from traveling to America. Also in our studio today, Dr. Edgar Francis, Associate Professor of Middle Eastern History at UW-Stevens Point. And you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-780-9742 or by putting a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page.
That shining at night in Tunisia, they guide you through the desert sand.
And let's start with you, Dr. Edgar Francis. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of Tunisia and I think also the importance, let's go way back, of the old city of Carthage, the strategic importance of its location as the northernmost country in Africa jutting out into the Mediterranean.
For those of you not sitting in front of a globe, As Glenn said, Tunisia is the northernmost country in Africa. And I'd like to start on the northwest corner of Africa. There you have Morocco. You go westward from Morocco to Algeria. And then Tunisia occupies a relatively small section of the North African coast. And then Libya is immediately to the west. To give you some idea of the compact size of the country, I mentioned Algeria is on the west and Libya is on the east. Algeria and Libya actually share a border south of Tunisia. So Tunisia occupies kind of a little wedge there in northern Africa.
Now, Carthage was one of the great centers of the ancient world. It was built by the Phoenicians, what, 1,000 BC or thereabouts?
The traditional date is 800 BC, so yeah, you're very, very much in that ballpark.
You can't find Carthage on a map now.
Well, the fact is, if you looked, it would be obscured by the dot for the city of Tunis. Today, Carthage, the ancient city, is effectively a suburb of the capital city of Tunis. Actually, when I was studying in Tunisia for my doctorate, I was living in a neighborhood just walking distance from some of the ruins of the ancient Carthaginian city. And as you point out, Carthage was an important trading center. It was founded, as I say, around 800 BCE. By the Phoenicians, who were a well-known trading people across the Mediterranean. And in short order, Carthage actually eclipsed the major Phoenician cities that had founded it.
Now, it was very strategically important for much of the world's history. Is it still that way? Is Tunisia still strategically important?
I would certainly say so. Now, if we can extend our geographic lesson a little bit further north, So the North African coast obviously is the Mediterranean coast, and Sicily and then mainland Italy are not far at all from Tunisia. So we're talking about a part of the world that is actually very very closely connected to the rest of the Mediterranean, or there's easy connection to the rest of the Mediterranean.
Tunisia is primarily a Muslim country.
Oh yes,
and it was also the spark for the Arab Spring Revolution. Tell us about that.
Okay. So the Arab Spring, as it's come to be known, it really had its origins, as you say, in Tunisia. The event that sparked these protests was on December 17th, 2010, a fruit seller in a rural part of Tunisia set himself on fire. This was in response to essentially humiliation he had faced at the hands of the local police. And this act really struck a chord within Tunisia, so that from this small rural area that few people outside of Tunisia would have heard of, protests against government policies spread to major cities like Tunis, the capital. And
in the case of Tunisia, it led to the uprising which deposed a hated dictator, Ben Ali.
Exactly. Ben Ali had been in power since 1987, and Ben Ali, as I said, had been in power since 1987, and as protests got more and more strong, protesters were killed in different cities. At the height of protests in the capital city, Tunis, the army made the decision. The leaders of the army said, "We are not going to fire on the protesters," and that really set the stage for Ben Ali's ultimate exit.
Let me talk to the three young ladies who are with us, and before we get some of your background, Wad, I'd like you to tell me where you were in 2010 and early 2011 when all of this was happening in your country and what your impressions of it are.
Okay, so first, hello everyone. I'm Wad Ghesmi again. So back to 2010 and 2011, I was a student in high school, and I heard about what happened in Tunisia and about the revolution, as all Tunisians heard about it, because it was really a changing point in Tunisia, and then it was something that is not familiar to us. So it was so special thing and new thing to us. As I said, I was a high school student, and I heard about it from social medias, as most of Tunisians, mostly on Facebook. How that affected me, as I told you, it was something new for Tunisians. So we didn't really realize how bad the situation was, and especially that I was a high school student. So I was like, it's our chance for our voices to be heard. It's our chance to say that we don't support dictatorship.
What did your parents think of all of this, and were they worried about your safety?
Yes, my parents, they were somehow worried about my safety, especially that just 1 year later I had to go to a school in a different place that's far from my house, like 3 hours away from my house. So I had to live by myself. So my parents were like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And I was like, "Yeah, for sure." And I was encouraged because after all, we're in Tunisia and we believe that our country is safe no matter what, and it belongs to us. Like, we don't need to fear anything.
What do your parents do for a living?
Okay, so my mother is a police officer.
Your mother is a cop.
Yeah.
She must have been horrified for your safety.
Maybe, yeah. As all parents, but she was encouraging me all the time. And as I told you, because youth played a so important role in the revolution. So she was like, yes, you're like all your friends. Your voices need to be heard, and you need to be brave for this, for what's happening.
And what does your dad do for a living?
Okay, my dad, he owns a private school for internships, or if I may say, it's kind of a training center, if that makes sense more here.
Now you're studying at UW-Marathon County.
Yes, yes.
What are you trying to pick up while you're here?
As you said earlier, I got a scholarship from the U.S. Department, and it's a program held by IREX and the U.S. Department.
What are you interested in doing in life?
Currently, I'm majoring in business management and administrations, and I'm so passionate with radios, and as you can see.
Now, you're also an intern working with me here at Wisconsin
right.
Public Radio. Are you
right.
learning anything?
Yes. No, seriously, every day I'm learning a new thing. The good thing is that I'm doing an internship in something different than my studies. So, yeah, for sure, I'm learning a lot.
Now, you had a chance to view the American political process up close. I took you as a reporter
yes.
to both the Donald Trump rally in Rothschild and the Bernie Sanders rally the next day in Wausau. What did you think of that?
That was something so interesting to me. Most of my friends were like, are you sure you want to do this, especially in Donald Trump's rally? And I was like, for sure, I want to.
Because you're a Muslim visiting.
Yes.
Visiting from overseas.
Yes, right. When we went to Trump's, I was a bit worried, but I was enough encouraged to go there and see what he has to say. And it was just something interesting to me.
And we'll be hearing a little bit of Wad's appearance at both of those rallies a little bit later in this program. Zainab Nalouti, same question to you. Where were you in late 2010, 2011, when all of this was happening, and what were your impressions of it?
Well, I was in, like Wad said, I was in high school. I didn't hear about it, like, on Facebook or on TV, and I was a bit scared, but also very proud of my country, and didn't know how much I loved my country until the revolution happened. So I was proud also with the army, and I was scared, but not that scared. It's mixed feeling.
And you two are here studying at UW-Marathon County. What are you trying to learn?
I'm studying business administration, and I'm trying to learn as much skills from the professionals here in the U.S.
And you're also an intern at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yes.
We're teaching you about the business side
yes,
of the radio
business. Yes, the
marketing
side.
And let's move to Tasneem Darati. Tasneem, what part of Tunisia are you from, and what do your parents do for a living?
I'm exactly from Tunis, La Marsa exactly. Hi, everyone. I'm exactly from Tunis, La Marsa exactly. And my father is a wholesaler, and my mother is a stylist.
And you're studying at North Central Technical College. What
yep.
are you trying to learn?
Yep, right. I'm going there for IT web design specialist.
And like most people in Tunisia, you're a Muslim. Where do you worship?
Yes, of course, I'm here as a Muslim. When I was in Tunisia, when the revolution first happened, I was in high school, as both they said. And everyone was, like, whispering before that until everyone, like, say, okay, let's make our voices heard, and everyone spoke up. And it was, like a small revolution also in our high school.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was speaking up and saying what they really think about. So, yeah, so I was, like, really proud and really amazed by how people were, like, courage and saying what they really thinking.
Now, unlike Wad and Zainab, you wear the traditional Muslim head cover, the hijab.
Yep.
Why do you wear that?
I'm really convinced, like, it's my choice that I have to wear it. Like, when I am in a certain age, I have to cover up my head. Yeah.
And how do people in central Wisconsin react when they see you wearing the hijab? Have you gotten any negative looks from people? Have you noticed anything?
No, never. No, not at all.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, they even came to me close and they say, oh my God, what are you wearing? This is looks nice on you. What is this? And they're trying like to know what is this and the meaning of it and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And I'd also like you to tell me if you've been disappointed or are still hopeful about the events following the Arab Spring Revolution.
We're still hoping. We still have hope in Tunisia and people, in Tunisia's people. We are a courage and brave country, yeah.
Now, Dr. Francis, tell us, if you could, the significance of the Arab Spring Revolution in Tunisia and elsewhere.
In my opinion, the events of the Arab Spring are the most momentous events that I have seen in the Middle East and North Africa in my lifetime. In Tunisia, this was the first time that a popular uprising in the Arab world had toppled a dictator, and in Tunisia, in particular, what is most significant there is that the Tunisian people, as our students have pointed out, and Tunisian leaders in politics and in civil society have been able to make it work. They've been able to hold things together and maintain this path.
Much better than in some of the other countries where the Arab Spring Rebellion took place. Now, in fact, Tunisia's relatively free elections and the ability of different factions to compromise were recognized with the Nobel Peace Prize in 2015. Here's Tunisian singer-songwriter Emel Mefluthi. Am I pronouncing that correct, Juan?
Yes, correct.
I am. And here she's performing her anthem. It's called My Word is Free at the Nobel Peace Prize concert last December in Oslo. Here are some of the lyrics. I am those who are free and never fear. I am the secrets that will never die. I am the voice of those who would not give in. I am free, and my word is free. Wad, guess me, what are those lyrics? What does this song mean to you?
It gives me shivers. This song means a lot to me. Since we've been prepared for this show, every time I listen to this song, it reminds me of many things. It reminds me for my home country. It reminds me of my family, the revolution period. I don't want to cry. Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of things.
Zeynep, same question to you.
Yeah, I love the song very much. It reminds me a lot of things, and it's very emotional. And we were here when we got the Nobel Prize, and we watched it on TV like everyone else, and we were like crying all over the place.
Tasneem?
Yeah, same here. I got like goosebumps hearing this song. It was amazing, and hearing her voice and the lyrics are really touching.
Powerful.
Powerful, yeah.
Now, before the revolution, Emel had to flee Tunisia. She had to go to France because her songs were banned in your country.
Yeah, she was considered as a rebel, and yeah, she has to be.
And she's back now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does that say about the freedom of speech that you now have in Tunisia that you didn't have before?
We have more freedom now for expression now. Everyone can say what they really want, and we have no limits for that.
Are you sure you have no limits? You don't have to look over your shoulders anymore?
No, not anymore.
What kind of a difference is that? You also lived in your younger years under Ben Ali. As you said, your mother is a police officer. She must have had some conflicted emotions about what she was doing as a figure of authority in that government.
Yeah, right. There are a lot of differences between before the revolution and now. People now are free. People now can speak their minds out. People can, they don't fear. Of course, we don't have limits. Like, your freedom cannot pass the others' freedom. But we're free now. We don't fear. We can say whatever we want. We can express ourselves. We're more open-minded, if I may say, because before we didn't have the chance to say and to prove to the others that we're open-minded. We're just like the whole world. We have thoughts. We have a viewpoint. We have something to say. Before we could not say this, but now we're like, we say it with all pride, and yeah, we're just proud of what's happening in our achievement.
Edgar Francis, your reaction to what you're hearing from these young ladies?
Yeah, it's just very, you know, very inspiring to hear their, you know, their description of how, you know, how Tunisia has changed since the revolution. I'd ask.
Yes, you may ask.
Oh,
the
yeah. You know, I'd like to ask. Ask the students, any of you who would like to respond, in terms of freedom of speech, how has the now that sort of Islamists are able to express themselves freely and are part of the political process, has that created other a different set of tensions or conflicts? In Tunisia, in terms of freedom of speech.
Juan, why don't you take this?
Sure. Yes, that created like many differences. In Tunisia, it's an Islamic country, but we're not all Muslims. There are other religions in Tunisia. We're not all Muslims. So before, people, they could not show up and say it with loud voice and say that I'm not Muslim or I'm a practical Muslim. Because even if you're a practical Muslim or in a high level of Islam, you cannot really talk about this. But now you can say it, I'm Muslim, and in different levels.
Is there separation of church and state in Tunisia as we understand it here in America? Or do... is the government pretty much wrapped up with your religion?
Actually, it depends on the governmental system, because we had the Islamic parties and we had the liberalian and so on. So, yeah, it's
so it's different. Not completely run by Islamic parties.
No.
You have a diversity of opinions,
yes,
and a diversity,
right,
of parties.
Right.
Very quickly, Dr.
Oh, yeah. Just if I can add that. Certainly since independence in 1956, Tunisia has had a very strong tradition of secular government.
Right. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take a short break. You can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Our guest today on Route 51, Dr. Edgar Francis, professor of Middle Eastern history at UW Stevens Point, and our three visiting students from Tunisia, Wad Gesmi, Zainab Naloudi, and Tasneem Dorati. When we return, we'll hear about their eyewitness accounts of American presidential politics and campaign appearances by Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders in central Wisconsin. But first, here's some music by a French Tunisian band called Benares.
I wonder past things I've been, nothing's gonna change. Oh, it's gobbled in Hurriya will amen. Lazana here to lay you feel the strain. Insanity if you bled haqil insane. So far from my family, I forgot what I supposed to be. So far from you, sweet country, I become someone else by me.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Fox Cities Convention and Visitors Bureau and the Sugar Maple Festival. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today on Route 51, Dr. Edgar Francis, professor of Middle Eastern history at UW-Stevens Point, and our three visiting students from Tunisia, Wad Gesmi, Zainab Naloudi, and Tasneem Darati. If you could see the video of the music that you're listening to, you would see some Arabic titles and happy people, sophisticated people at work and play, and they're all drinking Coca-Cola. Yes, we are listening to the soundtrack from a Tunisian soft drink commercial. So if you look at the images on that commercial, Wad Gesmi, it appears that Tunisia is very westernized with a capitalist consumer culture, much like America's.
Right. That was something I related when I first came here to the U.S. because Tunisia is based on a diversity of culture, if I may say, because as some people know, we were colonized by France. So we have that European touch in our lifestyle, but we still a oriental country with Arabic roots and, yeah.
Dr. Francis, how established are the multinational American-based corporations in Tunisia? And if they are established, does that provide some stability for the country? And conversely, has the American consumer culture maybe provoked a reaction from conservative Tunisians, maybe conservative Muslims?
I would say not so much American businesses, and I'm not sure how much of this is because of history or geography, but certainly French multinationals are a very large presence in Tunisia. For instance, when I was living there, the big supermarket was Carrefour.
Which, yeah.
okay.
Walmart for you.
So you have the equivalent of a Walmart, but with a French name. And, of course, it was French colonial Tunisia for a long time until 1956.
Exactly. And there are longstanding ties between Tunisia and France. There are also many ties with Italy. Remember, geographically, Italy is very close. I used to live fairly near a neighborhood that used to be predominantly Italian, really, really before before independence.
Tasneem, do you shop at your equivalent of Walmart, or do you shop from street vendors?
Yeah, usually from Carrefour because it's like 30 minutes away, so I'm always there. Yeah.
How about you, Zainab?
I prefer the street vendors. That thing I miss here in Wisconsin.
Now, if you just joined us, Wad Gesmi is an intern at Wisconsin Public Radio. She joined me at two presidential campaign appearances in central Wisconsin earlier this month, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Mr. Trump appeared at the Cedar Creek Convention Center in Rothschild. We talked to several Trump supporters about whether they agree with his call to ban Muslims from entering the United States. You're going to hear from Mexican-American Jessica Sinabi of Green Bay, Deborah and Mick Lestrance from Marinette, Gail Danch and Larry Dickfus from Port Edwards, and the son of a Polish immigrant, Wojciech Franz of Silver Bay, Minnesota. But first, here's presidential candidate Donald Trump in the Wausau area.
We will build a wall. Who's going to pay for the wall?
Mexico!
Who?
Mexico!
Mexico will pay for the wall. Now think of it. The drugs that are pouring across the border. The fact that our kids are being poisoned.
I like him because he's a businessman. We need somebody like that in the White House right now, especially for us middle-class people.
How do you feel about his idea of building a wall with Mexico?
That's not going to happen. Who's going to pay for it? I mean, you have to be realistic. Some of the things that he says, I am skeptical about that.
What about the idea of banning Muslims from overseas, at least temporarily?
sometimes I think it's not what he say, but how he says it. So I don't think he means that really. And I think he's going to be more embracing all the people from all over the world.
You've got a little bit of an accent. Are you Hispanic?
Yes, absolutely. Mexico Americana.
Even as a Mexican American, you support him with all of the publicity regarding the wall.
Yes, absolutely. We need somebody like that in the White House. He's a businessman.
Love Trump, love his ideas. I'm all for him. We're on the Trump train. Everybody needs to get with it.
How do you feel about his idea of not letting Muslims into the United States?
No, we need to find out why they're attacking all of our cities to put a temporary ban on it. We don't want every city bombed, so we need to figure out what's going on.
Trump's talking about banning people that are coming from Syria and Middle East now, just until they clear all this mess up which Obama created and Bush before him.
You know, in my mind, I'm not saying that we restrict all Muslims, but with all of what we have going on now with the terrorists, I think we really have to crack down on who we let into our country. We got to protect ourselves.
Something to say about that. Yeah. None of them like Americans.
And, none of them?
No.
Well, that's his opinion. I don't believe that, but
they're all death to Americans. That's what every over there is like, death to Americans.
What about the Muslims who live here in America?
My sister has friends that are Muslims, and they've been here for 20 years already, and they're nice people.
I'm from Silver Bay, Minnesota, by way of Chicago. My parents are both immigrants, legal immigrants from Poland.
How do you feel, as a legal immigrant, how do you feel about his idea that we need to restrict Muslims coming into the country?
Right now, it's, like you said, we have to figure it out. I'm with it. I'm with it. I'm with the wall. I'm with restricting definitely illegal immigration. Legal immigration done right is not a problem, never has been. I've been following the Syrian civil war since it broke out, the so-called Arab Spring. And Syria used to be something of the jewel of the Middle East. And that partially due to our foreign policy, we've completely destroyed it. And now we have, let's call them what they are, head-chopping maniacs. You can't bring them in here, you can't vet these people, you don't know who's who.
Right now at Wisconsin Public Radio, I've got a young lady working for me. She's an exchange student. And she's a Muslim from Tunisia. What would you say to her? Would you not let her in?
You know, Tunisia, I'm sure you know this, Tunisia's been the site of several horrible attacks where tourists are being machine gunned on the beaches. Tunisia has become, like, I believe, one of the, if not the biggest recruitment hotbeds for ISIS. She's here now, legally.
Yeah.
Then I don't think there's a problem. But for the future, until we do figure out what's going on, and there's a proper way to vet people, the head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, these people already said that there's no way to vet any of these people.
Those are comments we recorded at the Donald Trump rally earlier this month in Rothschild. That last speaker was Wojciech Frantz of Silver Bay, Minnesota. He is the son of Polish immigrants. And if you could see the expressions on the faces of our Tunisian Muslim student guests, disbelief and horror, I think, is pretty accurate to describe how they felt, Tasneem.
One terrorist does not describe our religion and, like, many, I don't know how many billions of Muslim people. I don't think that.
Zainab, your reaction to what you just heard?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I mean, not all Muslims are terrorists. Not all people, like...
Was it interesting to you that when I challenged some of these people, who actually seemed to be kind of intelligent, nice people, but misinformed, that when I challenged the one gentleman who said they're all death to America, he said, well, I've known these Muslims for 20 years. They're nice people.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if they don't know that we're Muslims, we're just nice people to them. Until they know that we're Muslims, and then their view changes.
Well, guess me, you were there in that room. What were your impressions of what you saw that day?
Well, that was, as I said, something interesting to me to see, but that made me see a whole different category, if I may say, of people in the U.S. Because as much as I've been welcomed here since I came here, as much as I saw kind of different people with different viewpoints. When I went to Trump's, I don't know, it was, that didn't really make sense to me. But as the girls were talking, when they first, they don't know that we're Muslims, they're like, they see us as human being, but then when they know that we're Muslims, they're like, oh, really? You're Muslim? So, yeah, you're just like us. I mean, like, you're not really different. And then, I don't know, that was kind of, that was confusing. And
Dr. Edgar Francis, your impressions of what you just heard, and we heard a lot of different things. The Hispanic lady, for instance, who doesn't believe he's really going to build a wall or will actually restrict Muslims from entering, and she supports him anyway.
Well, I have heard this particularly from Trump supporters, and my response is that we have to take politicians at their word. We have to, certainly skepticism of political promises is part of the American tradition. But if somebody says that they're going to do something, I believe that voters should basically judge them on what they have said they will do, not on what the voters hope they will or will not do.
Wojciech Franz, the last gentleman we heard mentioned the terrorist attack on the beaches of Tunisia. 38 tourists were gunned down. How much of a terrorism problem does Tunisia have?
Tunisia does not have a very does not have a significant terrorism problem. I would say that since the revolution, there has been more danger than there was before. Let's face it, dictatorships are often very safe places. However, incidents like the attack on the beach are very rare and sporadic. The greater danger to Tunisia is, as I mentioned, Tunisia shares a border with Libya. We haven't talked about other countries affected by the Arab Spring, but the fall of Gaddafi in Libya has been followed by political chaos in that country, including the rise of Daesh, what your readers probably know as ISIS, and similar groups. So that external threat is the greatest to Tunisia.
Wad Ghesmi, are you concerned that when people in the United States immediately they think of the one terrorist attack in Tunisia in which these tourists were killed, are you worried that that is negatively affecting perceptions of Americans in this country? And how important is tourism to your country? Because obviously if you have a bunch of tourists at a beachfront hotel, you must have beautiful beaches in Tunisia.
Yes, right. Actually, in Tunisia, we have the seventh best beach in the world, which is Klibia. Tourism is so important, not just to Tunisia, I think, but it's to every country. So it's an important thing. So absolutely, this will affect Tunisia, and it's affecting it, to be honest. So,
should Americans feel safe coming to your country?
As I said last time in my country presentation, we live there in Tunisia, and I'm here with you. So, I don't know. You think? Of course, I do respect their opinions, and I do understand that they fear what's happening, and it's their right. But we live in Tunisia. There are a lot of people in there, so yeah.
Well, Wad Ghesmi saw Donald Trump on Saturday and then got a completely different experience when she attended a Bernie Sanders rally the next day at the Grand Theater in Wausau. We also talked to people in attendance there, including Sarah McFarland of Stevens Point, Joe Tilka of Stevens Point, Samantha Masterton of Antigo, Dwayne Packard of Antigo, and 89-year-old Marilyn McGill of Wapaka. But first, here's presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
This campaign is listening to people whose voices and whose pain are not often heard. People living in fear, in the shadows, people being exploited. We have got to move forward toward comprehensive immigration reform and a path toward citizenship.
It just makes me absolutely sick. I have a sister who is a Muslim. She belongs in this country. My son is African American. He belongs in this country. Our country is built on diversity. It's built on freedom, and it's built on tolerance of all people of all religions. Because a few people have made a terrible choice does not mean that we need to ban an entire religion. That's not going to bring us peace. That's not going to bring us tolerance.
I'd like to introduce you to somebody. This is Wad Gesmi. She's an intern working for Wisconsin Public Radio. She's a Muslim from Tunisia.
Great. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're part of our democracy. And, you know, if you're willing to be part of the solution, then I think everybody should be welcome here.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is what we want to hear from people like you. Thank you.
What do you think of Donald Trump's proposal that we ban Muslims from entering the United States for security reasons?
One word, crazy. Yeah, it's not appropriate. We're way better than that. I think our country as a whole is better than that.
No, we can't ban Muslims because some of my best friends are Muslims. It's the truth. So if we ban them, look at all those people I can't be friends with. You know, come on.
I think he was totally out of line. He's picking on a specific group, and he spouts off, I think, before even thinking about what he's saying. He seems to try to incite anger amongst all the people.
Are you a Bernie Sanders supporter?
No.
Why not?
Because I lived through World War II, and I know what communism is, and socialism is just a sweet word for communism.
Who do you support?
I support either John Kasich or a Trump.
What do you think of Donald Trump's call to ban Muslims from entering the United States?
Well, they just stopped there. He said before they were vetted and find out why they were coming. We've had enough attacks here already, so I don't blame him.
Can I introduce you to somebody? This is Wad Gesmi. She is a Muslim from Tunisia, and she's working with us at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good.
And if Donald Trump had his way, she wouldn't be here right now.
Well, I don't know what to say to that, because I have nothing against Muslims. I love a lot of them. But I don't have anything against anybody.
That is 89-year-old Marilyn McGill of WAPACA. And Wad, you were there when I was interviewing these people.
Yes.
And you started talking to Marilyn, and I turned my back and I turned around, and the two of you were hugging each other. How does that happen?
I just talked to her, and then she said that we don't hate Muslims. Like, we know, like, we have some Muslim friends, and we know how Muslims are. So she's not judging me based on just a group of Muslims. She's not being, like, some of them.
How did you feel about the vibe at the Bernie Sanders event compared to the Donald Trump event?
Compared to the Donald Trump's, that was so different. At Donald Trump's, to be honest, I was kind of stressed because I was expecting something to happen. But at Sanders, when I saw all those people, they were welcoming, they were smiling, I just felt comfortable. I didn't feel any bad, like, feelings. And just to say something about banning Muslims, Islam is the third largest faith in the United States, based on Wikipedia. And 3.3 million, which is equal to 1% of the population here, are American Muslims. So would you ban or kick them out? They're Americans. They are Muslims.
Zainab, let me get your reaction to what you heard at the Bernie Sanders rally.
Oh, I was smiling while hearing that, because it was different from Donald Trump.
And same question to you, Tasneem.
Yeah, I had the advantage to be there, and I was so inspired and amazed to have such a leadership, maybe.
And Dr. Francis, you've got 15 seconds for a reaction here, and then I've got to take a quick break.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It sounded like the Sanders supporters had had a handle on what Donald Trump had said and how that relates to American history and quite frankly, American law.
We're going to take a quick break. Here is the Tunisian national anthem.
Ha-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun-tun
Contributors to WPR include the UW Eau Claire Forum and Artist Series and Badger Brothers Coffee. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Details at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
I'm Glenn Moberg, our guest today on Route 51, Dr. Edgar Francis, professor of Middle Eastern history at UW Stevens Point, and our three visiting students from Tunisia, Wad Gesmi, Zainab Naloudi, and Tasneem Darati. We're listening to some popular music that reflects the patriotic attitudes of the people of Tunisia. This is called A Song for You by rap artist Benderman and other Tunisian musicians. Wad Gesmi, you can understand what they're singing. What are they singing?
They're talking about Tunisia. They are saying, wherever I go, no matter what happens, I'll be back to you. I'll be back to Tunisia. And yeah, this is my feeling now.
Zainab?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to listen to this song when you miss your country so much. But we'll be back.
And Tasneem?
We're feeling nostalgia.
Yeah.
Is this kind of a sentiment, this optimism in the face of what's happened in the Arab Spring? Is that an important theme in Tunisian music right now?
Yep, it is. Yeah, everyone is singing this song and, like, expressing what they're feeling with this song.
And Wad, is that particularly important? Because some of you have been disappointed a little bit by some of the things that happened after the Arab Spring.
Of course, as I told you, it was a new thing for Tunisians. We weren't really used to what was happening. So, of course, some people will accept it, some won't accept it easily, and others will totally refuse it. So, yeah, that's...
And this is another piece of music that speaks to today's Tunisia by Latfi Bushnek and Dali Ghana. Am I pronouncing
right.
that right?
You're doing great.
I have trouble with Arab names and Arab words. What are they singing here?
Here they are. It's like a message to all Tunisians. It's like, just keep smiling, be optimistic, and don't fear tomorrow. Just ignore what happened. Don't think about it. Just be optimistic and just, yeah, look to the future. With, yeah, exactly.
Dr. Francis, your perceptions of the optimism in today's music in Tunisia, perhaps it reflects a sense of hope for the future.
It certainly sounds like it does, especially hearing what my fellow guests have, what my fellow guests have to say. And as we've pointed out, Tunisians were honored in the 2015 Nobel Prizes for their accomplishments. And it's just great to see, and I think important to maintain that sense of optimism.
Ladies, you've had a chance to visit several parts of the United States, Hollywood, Los Angeles, New York. What are the differences between how you viewed America before you came here and how you view it today? And I need you to be kind of quick with this. Give me about a 15-second answer. We'll start with you, Tasneem.
Okay. When I first came here, I didn't think that it will be like this, like in the movies. But when I went to Hollywood and saw like the famous part and the homeless parts in Hollywood, I was like, okay, this is the real America. I can see everything, the positive and the negatives.
A tale of two cities. Zainab, your impressions of America before you got here, and how have they changed?
Tasneem said, America is not like in the movies. There's a beautiful America, and there's the homeless part, and we love it.
And Wad, guess me the same question to you.
Okay, so what I want to say, this goes to not just the U.S., but all the countries in this world. You should not judge a country based on what you see on TV. You have to visit it. And I really love the U.S., and I love the experience here. So, yeah, just you have to experience the country and the culture yourself so you can make the difference. But still, we saw different perspectives of a country in general and the U.S. So yeah, I'm totally satisfied with
that. And Dr. Francis, you've got the final word.
If I can actually say something to tie together the two themes of today's program, the Arab Spring and the current American political campaign, it is important to remember that the call to ban Muslims from entering the country came after essentially was directed at refugees from Syria, and those refugees from Syria were fleeing because of chaos unleashed after the Arab Spring.
We do want to thank our three guests from Tunisia, Wad Ghesmi, Zainab Naludi, and Tasneem Dorati, who are studying at UW Marathon County and North Central Technical College, thanks to the Thomas Jefferson Scholarship Program, and Dr. Edgar Francis, Associate Professor of Middle Eastern History at UW Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, today's show producer, Wad Ghesmi, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. That's shining at night in Tunisia. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Emil Mathluthi, Benares, the Coca-Cola Company, Benderman, Lotfi Bushnik, and Ella Fitzgerald. Next Thursday on Route 51, we'll be looking at two major initiatives in Portage County to align the business, tourism, and creative economies to spur development and engage the millennial generation. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.